runs into difficulties. And ultimately, there is this terrible difficulty called death, which confronts us, and we can't avoid it. It's the great assassin of this world, and practically speaking, actually speaking, no one knows when it's going to come. So we live our life knowing that we're not going to be here forever, but we live our life forgetting that we're not going to be here forever. And as we go through life, we see that we are confronted with disturbances and difficulties. And we tend to think that if I just can move the disturbance out of the way, if I can just move the difficulty out of the way, and if I can just pull the thing that I imagine is going to cause me happiness, and that which I imagine is going to cause me happiness is somewhat based on, as we called it in the last class, the presuppositions or our own conditionings. We imagine things are going to bring us the satisfaction that we are longing for, and we want to pull that closer and push away the difficulties. But there's another way to look at the difficulties, and we will get to that point quite soon. Raise your hand if you were here last week. Raise your hand if you weren't here last week. Okay, well, thank you for coming this week. But I'll give a little bit of a review and tell a little of the story and tell some of the philosophical points that were underpinning the story. And I'll try to do it a little bit briefly, but I probably won't be able to because I get caught in these points because I find them very captivating and very important and leading up to what a lot of the conclusion that we're going to hit today and we're going to speak about today. So there was a higher being called a Gandharva named Upabharana. And, oh yes, before I begin, I'll say something that I said last week at the beginning of the presentation. And that point was that because I've been in the Hare Krishna condition and tradition for 50 years. So all the language and concepts I use come from that tradition. But and truth is truth, though. So if what I say is a little bit different from the tradition or the concepts that you're used to, just see if you can take out the truth from what I'm saying, because again, truth is truth, and regardless of the tradition that it comes in, it's still going to overlap. The truths overlap in all traditions. So there was once this higher being who had an excellence of beauty, and he had an excellence of an ability to sing. And he was so beautiful, and he sung so sweetly. It was an opulence. It was a gift, practically speaking. And when we spoke about this last week, we mentioned that everyone has their gifts. Everyone has their opulences. But what is the tendency when we do have an opulence and we do have a gift? The tendency is that we become proud. We think this is mine, and because I have this, and look at this person, and they don't have it like I have. And that pride has to be given up. Has to, not in the sense that we don't have a choice, but in the sense that if one wants to find out the spiritual purpose of life and use that gift, that opulence, in a proper way, not selfishly, but in service to others and ultimately in service to the Supreme Absolute Truth, that pride has to be given up. I once had the experience, as I was visiting the Hong Kong temple, the Hare Krishna temple in Hong Kong, and with Jagatrini, and we both were visiting. And when we got off the plane in Hong Kong, this was quite a few years ago, the devotee in charge, who was a friend, he arranged that we get picked up in a stretch limo. You know those? Now, one of the things about a stretch limo is that it has to have darkened windows. Do you know why? Raise your hand if you know why it has to have darkened windows. Surely you must be able to figure this one out.
People can't see you.
Yes. And when people can't see you, what do they want to do? They want to see who is riding in the stretch limo. So anyway, the kind soul who organized the stretch limo, he said it wasn't really any more expensive than a taxi. Of course it was, but not that much more, he said. So we got into the stretch limo, and it had such an effect. And the ride to where we were staying was perhaps 20 minutes, perhaps a half hour. But in that short time, I found myself going like this. I'm telling you the truth. It affected me so deeply. And we were driving along, and then we got to the place where we were staying. And that very important moment was just now to blossom forward, is when the door opens. And of course, you never ever open your own door in a stretch limo. The driver has to get out. He comes around and he opens the door for you. And here was the moment where everyone would see who was behind that darkened glass. This time it was me. So, Krishna has his own funny way of doing things. So I got out, and then, and the people naturally, everyone looks, but doesn't look too much because no one wants to feel that they're very impressed by these kind of things, although everyone is impressed by these kind of things. So I got out, and the driver took the luggage and put it out. And then, as it turned out, we were staying on the fourth floor of an apartment building, and there was no elevator. So after the driver pulled away, we had to carry our own luggage up the stairs. So Chris, I thought that was so classic. I have to admit, it did take the pride from me. So one must give up pride. So when one looks at something like that, when it's happening to one, then one can see that there's a blessing amidst it, and that's we're going to hear about that point quite soon. So really, one must give up one's pride, and one must, in the sense of if one wants to make advancement, and if one wants to rid oneself of illusion, one must, of course, one doesn't have to be like this. One can bathe in the pride of having something temporarily, a gift temporarily, and then try to use it. And this is what this Upabharana tried to use. He tried to use his beauty and his singing ability, not for the purpose for which it actually is given to him, for which our gifts are given to us. The gifts that we have, whatever they are given to us, whether they're great, great gifts or small gifts, and everyone has some. They're given to us for service, not for selfishness. Because if we take them selfishly and use them selfishly, self-centeredly, as if they were meant for me, as if they were mine, they will cause us difficulty later on. And because this Upabharana had been invited to a festival specifically to glorify the Supreme Absolute Truth, and he was supposed to use his gift of singing in that, and because he didn't, those who were organizing the festival cursed him. You will lose everything. And that is basically everyone's situation in this world, that whatever we have, we are destined to lose it, because we tend, of course, not you, but others, and me too, tend to become proud and think we are worthy and think, use them selfishly. And then when they are taken away from us, and time takes everything away, time is the great thief. When time steals away whatever gifts we have, then we feel, oh, we feel so bad. And if we use whatever wealth, gifts we have, opulences we have properly in our life, then we can feel so comfortable when time comes and does what time does.
Is it only pride that causes that?
Is there any pride?
Is it only pride that causes that? Like the only sin, type of sin?
It's a result. Pride is also a result. A result of not accepting that ultimately we are servants. So there, in pride, as a before pride, there's some envy.
Right.
Also. Yeah. And envy causes illusion and ignorance. And ignorance causes a false sense of inflated, is the psychological term, an inflated sense of self, when after all we are all so insignificant. And it's such a confronting thing when you consider that probably at most, well, I could look around the room and say, okay, we'll give it a big estimate of, because Merle Dar will live to be 163 years old, but 100 years from now, no one probably will even know we ever existed. And yet we're so, and now we're proud. So this is illusion. This is ignorance. Ignorance of reality. What to speak of it 200 years from now or 300 years from now. Even the greatest persons who are most famous in this world now, in 1,000 or 2,000 years, no one will consider them. All that is left is a list of names, it says somewhere in Bhagavatam. There's nothing remaining of their fame and glory and their pride. Oh yes, that's another point that I'd like to make, and thank you for indirectly bringing it up, that because the conceptions and vocabulary may be a little bit different, please feel free at any time to ask any question you like about what we're talking about. And also in the next and final class, we'll have more time for questions. And if I'm not careful, the review is going to take up the whole class, and then we're going to be, well, I'll be in trouble anyway. So, he was cursed. This proud but very gifted person was cursed to lose his opulence, and he took his next birth as a very humble, bereft of wealth, orphan who didn't know who his father was, and just his mother was a servant in some like a hotel or something like that, just exchanging basically room and board for work, just to maintain the life, her life and the life of her son. And her son, who it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, his name, but later on he was called Narada. Narada Muni. Nara means man, and Da means giving. So he gives. He will later become a great sage, and he will give to mankind and womankind something very valuable, and his life will show what he gives. So he had nothing. But he had one great gift too, you could say. He was very innocent. Well, we're going to move up to three. He was humble because he had nothing, and he liked to serve. when we're proud, we like to be served. When we're humble, we like to serve, and that is our natural mood, one of humility and service. And pride covers that serving mood up with, instead of wanting to serve, wanting to be served. So everyone who doesn't want to be served, raise your hand. Wow, very good. That means you've been through life. Maybe a little traces still remain, though, somewhere. And this is really the great challenge of life, to shift. To shift, to turn towards the absolute truth, instead of having our back turned towards the truth, the absolute truth, ultimately Krishna. And instead of thinking that I am the center, which is obviously ignorance and obviously illusion, and I always end up saying that even though I may feel myself, experience myself as a center, I can't convince anyone to agree with this point that I am the center. Not one person, because everyone is thinking themselves as the center. So this boy, he liked to serve because he was humble, and it's natural to like to serve. But he was naturally, and he didn't have his own mobile phone yet, and he just didn't have anything, and it was just natural. So he was serving, and then in the Chaturmasi, the 4 months of the rainy season, some holy people came, Bhakti Vedanta. Vedanta means who had the end of knowledge, where the conclusion of knowledge, which is devotional service, serve the Supreme Absolute Truth with devotion. So he, this young boy, with these great holy people who were passing by during the 4 months of the rainy season, where people don't travel, the sages don't travel in India, the saints don't travel in India, they stopped at this place, and what did they, and the boy served them, and he heard the words that came from their mouth, which was spiritual truth, glorification of the Supreme Absolute Truth, glorification of Krishna, and that lifted his consciousness. It shifted his consciousness. It filled his boyish heart, which was already very pure. It filled it with knowledge and a taste. He got the taste for glorifying and chanting and serving the Supreme Absolute Truth. And then, when they were leaving, they imparted to him very, very confidential secret. The Sanskrit word is guhyatam, or rahasya, sometimes that word is used. Secret knowledge. And sometimes the deepest and most secret of knowledge can be known by others, but they don't have the consciousness to receive it properly. So it doesn't enter their heart. It goes in one ear and then out the other. But he, being receptive, he heard well, and it touched his heart. It entered his heart, and it didn't leave. But after the 4 months of the rainy season were over, they left. They were paripadactic. They were always on the move, except these 4 months. Why were holy people on the move, these saints, these sages on the move always? Because when you're always traveling, you don't accumulate so much, and you don't get attached to so much, because you have to carry everything with you. And there's a limit to what you can carry with you, so you tend to minimize what you carry, because the weights that we carry in life are very heavy. They left. He wanted to go with them, but his mother was alone. he loved her, she loved him, she had no one but him. So you can imagine the scene when these holy persons left, and they left him behind, and he felt so empty. And that's where we will pick up today. This is the fifth verse of the sixth chapter in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. I'll half read the verses, sort of just paraphrase them a little bit. So the sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me, Narada Muni is telling the story, Narada is telling the story of his own life, they departed for other places, and I had to pass my life in this way. So could you go to put on the first two of the four truths that we covered last time, and today the third and fourth truth shall be revealed. So we spoke about, like, we're all in certain situations in our life, and there's difficulties attached to us, and pain and misery attached to our situations, and we try to remove it, but they tend not to go away. I don't know if you've noticed that. They tend to shift, like carrying a weight here, and you can shift it to here, or put it on your back. Nowadays, people carry the weights in their backpacks, and they think that they're very progressive because they have a backpack, but they've just shifted the weight to their back, and they're still carrying it. Are you going to make that clear?
Yes, I'm going to attempt it.
Let's see if we can actually do it. Will it clear? No. Clarify. Huh? No? Why? That didn't help any. That didn't help any either. Everyone clean your glasses. Okay, that's... Why? Why is it? Is it too close? Is that why? Anyway, if you can't read it, let me know and I'll read it to you.
I'm not sure.
Maybe the lens has. This, why don't you pull it back?
It's fine, come back here.
Huh?
The back is fine.
Who said that? You're ruining all our fun of complaining.
No.
Is that all right? Oh, anyway, that's what we can do. So then he continues telling his life story, and he says, I was the only son of my mother, who was not only a simple, but a maidservant. Since I was her only offspring, she had no other alternative for protection. There's a tendency for mothers to look to their sons as their protection if they don't have a husband to care for them. So she bound him with the ties of her affection. Narada, she bound Narada. She wanted to look after my maintenance properly. She wanted to do everything for me. But because she was not independent and she had no means, she couldn't really help me at all. Because the world, Narada said, is under the full control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everyone is like a wooden doll in the hands of a puppet master. In Bengali, the word for puppet is putul nach. Yes, putul nach, which means a dancing doll. I mean, in English, a marionette. And in Hindi, it's karputli, I think. Nikunj, am I correct? Karputli. Putli. Where does the car come from? Anyway. Okay, putli. So, there's a hint here. Everyone is like a wooden doll dancing as another entity, the Supreme Lord, is pulling the strings. So something is going to happen to Narada. And and his mother. When I was a mere child, he continues, of 5 years, I was in the Brahmin school in the hotel where people were passing through, and I was dependent on my mother's affection, and I had no experience of life. But once, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent. Why? Fate, one could say fate, one could say karma, one can say the grace of God, one can say the anger of God or something like that, but here he just says the influence of time, because time inevitably brings, changes our situation. We may like our situation, we may not like our situation, but time, like a big stirring rod, changes everything by the force of time. And sometimes it changes things so we're in a more pleasant situation. Sometimes it changes things that we're in a less pleasant situation. And sometimes it changes things and we're in a dangerous or difficult or even dangerous situation. And there, this young boy, 4 years old, was met with a disaster. His mother, who was the only person caring for him, died. Now, he is not the only one who meets difficulties in life or dangerous situations in life. And the question is, how to deal with dangerous or difficult or unfortunate situations, which by definition, practically speaking, are beyond our control. And here in the second truth, the first one was that we're in a particular situation, in our lives, and we try to remove the difficulties. But just as Narada was in the situation he was in now, due to something he had done, a curse he had received in a previous life, he had no idea about that, why he was in that difficult situation. So when we try to shift the difficulties of our situation, it's so hard to do because we don't know where and when they actually started and what the cause actually was. How many lifetimes ago did something I do cause me to be in the situation I'm in now and the difficulty I'm in now? So what to do? Narada, by great fortune, real great fortune, had received knowledge, transcendental knowledge. And the challenge, if you have some knowledge, and I call it a challenge because it's not easy to do, is that one should see one's situation through the lens of knowledge, of transcendental knowledge. Because this kind of knowledge, it gives us it's an absolute knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is an absolute knowledge. And there were 4 points of knowledge that Narada Muni received. One was that there was nothing in existence ultimately other than the Supreme Lord, who was a person. Second, to perceive something as some situation or object as separate from that Supreme Absolute Truth is illusion. It is not real. Third, you can, practically speaking, actually speaking, only be in the consciousness where you perceive the Supreme Absolute Truth in everything and in every circumstance. You can only do that really if you have developed love, prema bhakti, love for Krishna. And fourth, there is nothing to be learned in life, no truth higher than this. No matter how you struggle, whether you look, if you define truth negatively, like saying, this is how to define a watch negatively, to define it positively, it is a timepiece, it is a watch, it has a gold color on most of it still. Or you could say it's not a horse, it's not a cow, that's defining it negatively. So vyatarik, yes, vyatarik is a negative definition. And I can't remember the Sanskrit word for the positive. However you look at knowledge, there's no knowledge beyond this. It's the vision that gives you the full security of knowing that you too are part of this absolute truth. You too are eternal. You too have a relationship with Krishna. And there's nothing that goes on that is external, beyond, or not included in the absolute truth. So Narada Muni was called on to see this difficulty through the lens of knowledge that he had heard. And this, I find, is the great challenge, to actually apply the knowledge to your life. It's one thing to theoretically know it, to be able to pass examinations where you have to recite what you know. But when your life is in difficulty, when distress comes, to take that knowledge and see the situation, to see grace and mercy in the situation, to see it as, I have this to learn something. I'm in, like Narada Muni, I'm in this humble situation to remove my pride. So he actually decided, as we shall now hear. Let's see what the third one is here, the third truth. Yeah. He decided, because he was seeing through the lens of knowledge, he naturally took advantage of the difficulty of being unprotected. As such a young boy, to deepen his spiritual advancement, and that is our challenge, to do the same. Or one of our challenges, to see in difficulty that there is some grace and mercy and kindness in it, and a lesson to be learned, and to have previously have studied enough to know what that, to know what knowledge is, and then apply it, instead of just being able to spout it, to be able to apply it, practically speaking, to the situation, and to be able to have such a deep realization of that, that the fear and anxiety that accompanies a difficult situation or a dangerous situation doesn't overwhelm your mind. That is a great challenge. And because it's such a great challenge, I'm going to try and say it again. That when we're in difficulty or danger, or the final D, death, it is not that I can think, oh yes, I remember hearing yesterday that I'm eternal soul, and therefore actually I don't have anything to worry about. It's not like one can easily just spout back some knowledge and apply it in that way. No, because the mind becomes so disturbed in difficulty, and it's generally the essential disturbance is fear. It is fear. And when one is afraid, the mind is not cool, calm, and collected. It is shaking, it is quivering, it is running, it is looking for shelter. And unless one has practiced in life taking shelter where shelter is, one will not be able to do it in difficult times of difficulty. So that's going to be the next topic that we lead to. Where is actually, where does shelter actually exist? Or you can ask yourself, and I won't ask you to reveal it, I won't ask you to raise your hand, what do you do when you're in distress? Difficulty, distress, danger. I'm not going to ask you, so don't worry, but just think, where does your mind go for shelter? Do you get angry? Who do you get angry at? Who? Just like there's a half joke that's filled with big truths, that someone is beating another person with a stick. And the person who's being beaten says, "Why are you doing this? Why are you beating me?" And the person who's beating says, "I'm not beating you, the stick is doing it." So, the truth in that is that behind every situation, the ultimate cause behind it is very beneficent. It is kind. It is the supreme absolute truth. It is Krishna. There's a mercy in it. There's something to be learned in it. Why is this happening now? Why is it happening to me? And we tend to just, our vision doesn't tend to go past the stick. The immediate cause of the situation. That's the tendency. So when we get transcendental knowledge and understand there is nothing, it's nothing that can occur that's not connected to the Supreme Absolute Truth, connected to Krishna, and see and understand something about the relationship that we have with Krishna, and understand that we have something to learn from this, and what is this? The depth of that realization is what is tested in difficult times. And so often, I'll fail. I'll turn in the direction for shelter where there is no shelter. And the usual things that one turns to in ordinary daily activity, or difficulties, is distractions of one kind or another. Just distractions and distractions and distractions and distractions. Different flavors of distractions, so we don't have to confront what's really going on. What's really going on? Difficulty. We don't want to confront the difficulty because it shows that it confronts us with the superficiality of our of the shelter. That we, the shelters that we choose, they're false shelters, not real shelters at all. Anyone have any questions about this very heavy, confronting concept? Yes?
From what you said, the mind needs to be sheltered.
We need to be sheltered, and the mind looks in the wrong places for shelter.
But could you say that if the mind is not sheltered, it's obvious that it will keep wandering?
If yes, the mind will keep wandering. It will, what the mind does is it tries to grasp onto something. Mm. It holds, it accepts something, and it rejects something. This is the main function of the mind. Sankalpa vikalpa. It holds on to something and it pushes something away. So we push something away in anger and in fear. I don't want this. I'm angry at this stick. Or it holds on to something that really can't give it shelter at all. Like the mother is holding on to her 4-year-old boy because That's the natural tendency, but the natural tendency isn't sufficient to give us shelter. So, so many people, what do they take shelter of when they take shelter of, you know, such a disease, the social media, you know, it's seen as an addictive disease. People take shelter of one form of illusion or another, distractions, you know, either some movie or another, or some game or another. Because people live their whole lives in a virtual world of video games, of computer games. They live their lives in that world because they don't want to face, or they just try to accumulate more and more money and things like that. As if it reminds me when I was in grade school. It was during the time of the Korean War, and in the United States and in New York, there was a lot of fear of an atomic war starting. So we'd be in, you know, third grade, fourth grade, and suddenly over the loudspeaker, the principal would announce, "Take cover, everyone." So we would train. This was called an area drill. So then we would train to get under our desks. So you can imagine, an atomic bomb has landed on the school, and there I am, fully protected under my desk. That's a false shelter, but they had to do something. And we used to wear, you know, identity. We didn't understand why they would call them dog tags, you know, like the army has, like that. We didn't understand why we had to wear them, but there was a reason, and, you know, we never could think that it was to identify the body in case. So this is what we were brought up in those days. So, you know, with that atmosphere. And that's the very nature of the material world. It comes in one form or another, this kind of fear. And what do we hold on to? And does the thing we hold on to the relationships that we look to when in difficulty, are they really capable of giving us the shelter that we long for? That not long for only, but the mind longs for, and that we actually require. So the difficulties can be seen. I would call them the minor difficulties. Everything from, you know, you miss the bus, you get in the traffic. You catch every single light as a red light when you're driving along. Or every day, there's so many minor difficulties, annoying difficulties, disturbances, just disturbances. Where? Just watch your mind. Watch your mind. Observe your mind. Be introspective and see where your mind goes for shelter. And the unsheltered mind will go to places where it doesn't truly get shelter. But Narada Muni was different. He was destined to become a great sage. So he was in a truly dangerous situation, not an imaginary dangerous situation. He was in a truly dangerous situation because he had no one to care for him, and he was 4 years old. But he had captured the gem of spiritual knowledge. And more fortunate than that even, that was the greatest fortune, but even the greater fortune, one could say, if he wanted, he had the desire to apply it to his life. And that is the real test. And that is that is what we're really being requested to do every time there is a disturbance, a difficulty. When we see life as something that is actually meant for spiritual advancement. And what I'm saying is not easy. And anyone who's been in a difficult situation, a very difficult situation, really knows this. How difficult it is for the mind, which tends to become simply angry and fearful, to take shelter of something that appears on one level theoretical. So the challenge is to get it from the theoretical platform, to practice it, to get it from the theoretical platform to the realized platform, and that comes from experience. With the minor difficulties will help us deal with the dangerous circumstances, and that will ultimately be tested when we have to deal with the ultimate dangerous circumstance. So Narada Muni took advantage of his unfortunate circumstance, and he took it. There must be some blessing in this, some special blessing on me in this. Can you do that? Can I do that? Well, we have to learn. Because he knew from the knowledge that he had and from the taste he had, the taste for the spiritual that the sages gave him, he knew that nothing can happen to him. He had this faith, he had this trust that nothing can happen to him external of kind Krishna's mercy. So therefore, thinking in that way, he decided, he was forced by his realization in one sense to take advantage of the difficulty, and he headed north. And then becomes, in one sense, a most interesting point. It's because sometimes we imagine, oh, I should take the spiritual life, or I join this or join that, and then my life should become, everything should become perfect, and you know, my dog won't have fleas, and my stocks will go up, and my property values will always increase, and my health, nothing will ever go wrong with anything. And we get disappointed when things don't go exactly the way that we, thinking that we know what's best for us, have planned for our lives. But after getting some spiritual knowledge and deciding, I want to use my life for spiritual advancement, and I will try sincerely to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, of Krishna, then we have to go through life. Each and every one of us have to go through life, and we have to meet our fate, our individual fate, our individual karma, and there's no avoiding it. For all individuals, no one looks the same, no one dresses the same, no one thinks the same. We all have different fates, and we have to go through life. So Narada Muni, again, there's no avoiding it. And the ideal, the attempt, I would say, rather than the ideal, is to take advantage of every situation we're in to deepen our spiritual advancement by taking the knowledge that we get and trying to apply it. So if we don't get any knowledge, we're not going to be able to apply it. So we want to get some knowledge, transcendental spiritual knowledge, some wisdom, some true wisdom. So Narada Muni left. So that's where the fairy tale we want to end. You know, and he lived happily ever after, but it doesn't happen like that. After his departure, I passed through many flourishing metropolises, cities, towns, villages, animal farms, mines, agricultural lands, valleys, flower gardens, nursery gardens, natural forests, hills, mountains full of reservoirs of various minerals like gold, silver, and copper, to tracts of land with reservoirs of water filled with beautiful lotus flowers, where there were, everything was fragrant and beautiful. There were bees and singing birds, but I passed also through many forests of rushes, meaning thorny bushes, bamboos, sharp grass, weeds, and caves, which were difficult to go through alone. I visited deep and dark and dangerously fearful forests, which were the play yards of snakes, jackals, and whatever, lions, tigers, and this is life. You know, some days we're passing through sweet, wonderful, fragrant places. Some days we pass through horrible places that are dangerous, actually dangerous. It's life. And we, no one wants the bad situations to occur. No one wants the day, but they must come, because we all have, this is our fate. This is, we all have our individual karma. It's always like this. It's always like this. Up and down, up and down, up and down. There's one famous story how the Chinese sage named Confuci, how do you say in Zhonghua?
Oh, Confuci.
Confuci. Everyone knows what his name is, how we pronounce it in English?
Confucius.
Yes. One day, he took very seriously the I Ching, which was a fortune-telling system. And he threw the I Ching, he was in a situation, and he threw the I Ching, and he got perfection as the result. Perfect situation as a result. And he immediately became fearful, because he knows what follows perfection is a problem. And what follows a problem is, you know, this is life. When you're at the peak, something has to happen. It's just the, this is just, it's like you want to tell your kids when they sit down, this is the way life is, you know, just you have to be able to deal with it. And how to deal with it? Through the lens of transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge. See it in perspective. See the blessing and the curse. See the gem hidden in the diamond, in the coal. It needs pressure sometimes. This is life. So Narada Muni lived his life. He passed through so many things. And then, one day, as he was traveling, this was years later, he felt tired, bodily and mentally. And I was thirsty and hungry, he says. So I bathed in the lake by the river and drank some water. And by contacting water, I got relief from my exhaustion. So after that, I saw that there was a beautiful big aswat tree, which means a banyan tree. And this forest was so peaceful. And the birds were singing, and it was fragrant. He was in that kind of a place due to the lotus flowers and the soft breezes that passed over the lake filled with lotus flowers. And so he sat down. He said, this is a perfect situation for me to do my meditation. So he sat down. So he began the meditation that he learned from those Bhaktivedantas so many years before. And he quieted his mind, and through the breathing exercises, because he was a practitioner at that time of Astanga yoga, then he began to breathe, and it made his mind very, very peaceful. And then he began to meditate on the Supreme Lord who is in everyone's heart. He began to meditate on the Supreme Lord in everyone's heart. So in his mind, he filled his mind with the heart chakra, and he meditated on the Supreme Lord within his heart. But then, suddenly, as he meditated, instead of him placing the Lord there just through his mind, suddenly he had, there was a spurti, which means there was a, the Lord manifested actually there in his heart. And he actually had the full experience, not the mental experience, but the full experience of the super soul, the Paramatma, Paramatma. Chiradansa, this is technically, who's in the heart, who is completely transcendental and full of ecstasy. So, when he experienced the actual Lord in the heart, he began in serving mood, meditating upon his lotus feet, and his mind became transformed in transcendental love. Tears were rolling down his eyes. And now he's going to describe as best he can the experience. I was overpowered by feelings of happiness. Every part of my body became separately enlivened, which means his eyes were focused on the Supreme Lord, his ears were hearing, his nostrils were engaged fully in the fragrance of the Lord. He was, and he became so absorbed in love. He, although he remained an individual, the Lord was an individual, he got so absorbed in his loving experience that he could not see both himself and the Lord. He was so absorbed in that loving experience. And all difficulties, all contaminations were at once, due to his absorption, and his full absorption in the Supreme Lord, they were removed. And he was in ecstasy. And suddenly, the Lord disappeared. And Narada Muni's meditation broke. He stood up, disturbed. He had the most valuable jewel, and suddenly he lost it. So what did he do? He immediately sat down in the same pose that he was in before and tried the breathing exercise and tried to focus again on the lotus of his heart, concentrating it fully, eager to view that form again. But he could not see him anymore. His mind was filled with distress. He was disturbed. But suddenly, in that lonely forest, he heard a transcendental voice. And with great gravity, with depth, in a very pleasing way, just to remove Narada's disturbance from his mind, he began to speak to him. Now there's a verse here. This is some of the words that are on the file. Oh, yeah, try to there. Yes, right before that one, the other way. Then we get the Sanskrit. Yeah. Hantansmin. Hanta in Sanskrit is a way of, it's like beloved. Hantasmin. Janmani bhavan. Bhavan means you. Janmani means in this birth. Namandrastam. Ihar. Iharati. Iharati means deserve. Namam, negative, drastu, see, in this birth, you will not, you do not deserve literally, you can, you will not see me again. Why? He's starting with 100,000 men. Oh, beloved, why doesn't he just give himself? For the same reason a parent doesn't give everything the child wants, because the child doesn't really know what's best for him. And here's why. Avipakwa means you are not, you still have some immaturity in you. Kashayana, there's some impurity in you still. You still have some tinges of wants on the selfish material level. And therefore, Dudosraham, one who is not fully mature, Kuyoganam, if not fully mature in yoga, Dudosraham, you won't be able to see me again. Aham, I am not seen again. Now this verse I don't think I put in, but please listen to it. Sakridyad Devarshan Rupam. Once only I've shown you, given you darshan, or allowed you to see this form, eten kamaya te anaga, even though you are sinless, eten kamaya, because your hankering, your desire, I want to increase your desire to see me. Matkama, with that desire, sanakai sadhu, oh holy person, oh devotee, oh one who is fixed in the eternal truth, sanakai, by increasing that desire, sarvan uchanti ritsayan, all the ritsayan, all the material complexities, all the material things that we have in our heart that won't give us the satisfaction that we long for in the deepest part of our heart, by this desiring, by intense desire, these will all be removed. And then you will go, be able to go to the spiritual world eternally. And when, even when the universe is destroyed, what to speak of your body, even when the universe is destroyed, your remembrance of me, because it is so deep within you, will be so deep within you, will continue by my mercy. So that's what the voice, unembodied voice, Akasvani it is called. And then, so he's in the forest, he saw the Lord, and the Lord disappeared. And it is like if, you know, what can you say, what is it like if someone gives you the most valuable gem, and then suddenly you lose it? You can only think about that. And then you hear the voice, it says, I've done this purposefully just to increase your desire. You've tasted this incredible, ecstatic sweetness once, but you're not going to taste it again in your whole life. But remember it and desire it, hanker for it. And that very hankering will cleanse your heart and carry you to forward eternally to your eternal situation, the spiritual world, by my grace, by my mercy, mad anugrahat, by my mercy. And then silence in the forest. Then Nahara continues. that supreme authority personified by sound and unseen by eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. And feeling a sense of gratitude, Nara said, in that forest, I bowed my head to him. And then he had to live his life, the rest of his life again. Next verse. And how did he live his life? Go ahead. Next verse. He continued wandering as he had done, because that was his sacred duty at this time, a wandering saint. But Namani Anantasya, the holy name, Nama, the holy name, Anantasya, continuously, of the Ananta, of the unlimited, Hatta Trapta, being freed from all the formalities, he didn't care for the material world anymore. And he would recite Patan, the holy names, and read and hear about the holy names of the most mysterious, all Bhadrani, benedictory activities. And he constantly, of the Lord, of Krishna, chanting, hearing, remembering. In other words, his mind was longing for that. And because his mind was always fixed on that level, hankering for that taste again, because there's such a difference between the taste on the spiritual level, the fragrance on the spiritual level, the natural ecstasy of the soul when his mind is on the spiritual level, than when he's grasping for the happiness on the mundane material level, being distracted. There's such a difference, and he could see the difference, and he just had that taste, and he just kept on that level, not caring about the world and what it thought about him. And he traveled all over the earth, and tasting that, as part of the verse, continuously tasting that, he traveled Vimada Vimatsara, fully satisfied, humble, and unenvious. It wasn't that he saw people who had big, flashy cars and houses and wealth and this and that, and why can't I have that, and only if I could have that. He had the satisfaction within that allowed him to travel and see everything in existence, and not and on the material level, and not want to touch it. He was in the world, but because his consciousness was always chanting and hearing and remembering and thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was above the world. And in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments on the material level because of the higher taste, Param Vishnavartite Bhagavad-gita says, having a taste on that level, became free by that hankering, he became free from all material tastes. And at some point, he said, I met with death. But just as lightning and illumination, when a lightning bolt comes There's no pause between the appearance of the bolt and the illumination, the light that comes from the bolt. Similarly, because he had cultivated his spiritual identity, the moment he dropped his material identity, his spiritual identity was immediately present because he had cultivated it so completely. And he became the spiritual person that he actually was as instantaneously as illumination comes with a lightning bolt. Because he was developing, he used his life, he used his time to develop that internally. Externally, he was doing one thing. He was wandering. He was traveling. But internally, he was cultivating his spiritual identity through this process of constant hearing and chanting. Yes. Okay, now go back to the other one. So, take advantage of difficulties to deepen your spiritual advancement, and always take shelter of Krishna. Always, always. And the mind will tend to not want to do this, especially when there's a disturbance, especially when there's a difficulty, but also especially when there's happiness. But regardless of the circumstance, if we take shelter of Krishna in a way similar to Narada Muni taking shelter of Krishna, by chanting and hearing always, then these difficulties will have served their purpose, and we will be maturing our spiritual identity with every time. And we can look at every difficulty and every disturbance that occurs to us in our life. We should become introspective in this way and assess how we're doing. Something happens. Well, how did I deal with that? Did I deal with that in a way that's going to elevate me? Or did I deal with that in a way that is going to... did I look for shelter where there actually is no shelter? Watch yourself and see how you do in life as you go through your lives and face life as it is for you as an individual. Get spiritual knowledge. Know where shelter actually is. See if you can cultivate it and discern a taste, the difference in the taste between the spiritual energy. Like when the chanting starts, it's different. You can feel the difference. You can say the difference in the mood. You can feel the difference in the energy. You can feel the difference in your heart. You can feel it when you're looking at others, which you don't do, but when I'm sitting here, sometimes I do that, see how everyone's doing. You can see how everyone just immediately feels some shelter and relief from the anxieties of not material life, but material consciousness that we carry with us wherever we go. Now, thank you so much. I've completed on one level the tale of Narada Muni from Srimad Bhagavatam with four truths. But as a free extra special gift, I'm going to introduce a fifth truth. See if it actually comes up. Yes. T-O-B and N-O-M. And that fifth truth is what we're going to speak about next week. It's because we have this, I'll even tell you what it means next week. Because we've given you something that is, in one sense, very, very simple, but not very easy to do. Because we're so habituated and entangled in containment. In a material, we've been trained on a material level, and we have our material habits, and it's and it's
yeah.
So TOB and NOM, and I'm going to tell you something very amazing next week if you will kindly come, something very amazing that I could say changed my life. Perfect timing, though, I have to admit that. Okay. We're a little bit over time. Is there any? Anyone have any questions? And the next class brings it, I think, to the more, to the very practical level, too. Because we've heard of an ideal person who made it perfectly. And then sometimes I think, well, you know, but what do I do? How does this apply to me? And this is what we'll be discussing next week, that kind of a thing. Yes?
Just a quick one. With fear, is it something that's engrossed in the material energy, or is that something we formulate ourselves in our minds?
That's the same.
Oh.
Material energy is very well formulated in our mind. There's a verse in the 11th canto, second chapter, that discusses this point fully. The source of fear is to see something, the circumstance, as separate from Krishna, the duality. This is, it goes back to the first.
I thought it was just from being grace and darkness.
Well, that is darkness, to not see Krishna in every circumstance. That is ignorance. Darkness means ignorance.
Okay.
Yes. But next week we'll have more time for questions. Please write down questions, because actually I want to cheat a little bit. I want to show you a video. Okay. Last question. Yes, come on. I'm sorry. I discouraged you.
So when you are faced with the difficulties, you have to act.
You have to act.
Because if you don't act, then it might create a bigger problem.
Yes.
In some cases.
Yes. But it's not your action alone that's going to cause the difficulty to disappear. You are not independent in your action to make a success for removal, because the first thing is that difficulties are very difficult to remove. We tend to shift one to the other. So there has to be another factor in there. And that other factor is the Supreme Absolute Truth. So when you fix your consciousness on the Supreme Absolute Truth and also act, then your actions will be in the proper order. And yes.
But when you have consumed it, when you have
consumed it,
means that you have understood that there is no solution, you have to live with it.
I'm sorry, I couldn't tell.
That you have understood that there is no solution of the difficulty.
The ultimate solution.
Yeah.
No, not that there's no solution of the difficulty. Like you're on you're in the train track and a train is coming towards you. Mm. There's a solution to get off the track.
Mm.
It's not that there's no solution to difficulties, but if your shoe gets entangled in the track, then even though you want to get out, you may not be able to. That's a silly example in one sense. So you are not, or you lose strength, or you have a heart attack, or so you're understanding what the solution is, according to your estimation, is necessary perhaps, but it's not sufficient to save you from the difficult circumstance. You need some grace and some mercy. Also, you need a sanction of the Supreme. When you go to the hospital, I once met a nurse who said that the most difficult thing about being a nurse is that when people come in to the hospital with a disease, with a serious problem, they expect you to cure them and remove it. And you don't have that power. And to have that expectation placed on you he said, is the most difficult thing about being a nurse. Because she knew that you give the medicine and you try your best, but ultimately it's not in your control. If it was in the control of the doctors and dependent on the desire of the parents, there would be never a child who dies. That's the point. Okay, it's a very short video, it'll change the mood though. Sorry, but please remember these points. It's a little video that I put together. It's not as good as the ones that Gopal edited, but...
Battery, 50%.
It's okay. We'll take care of you later. This we filmed in our backyard. It's a Gopinath backyard video. Louder. Yeah, keep it like that. I like it. But turn off some lights.
Very dumb.
Turn off some more lights. Yes, kangaroos. That's so
stare with ears a twitch, sensing always if danger lurks. Yes, kangaroos, when freed from fright, their hopping stops, and again they stand motionless. Season, but always ears perked upward, testing to trust or not the man before them. They squeeze under the fence, one by one, and yes, they hop and jump and bound with strong back legs and tail, forcefully pushing them forward. But their ears, tall and pointed, slit left, right, front, and back. Alert, alert, always alert for dangers present. Yes, kangaroos in the day hide. They sleep, they forage. Come dark, they eat again, but flee to the forest at sunrise's first ray. When rains come and end, I search for the sun to lay down in soft grass fields. Hop. They outbound barking dogs in chase, strong legs and tail fast forwarding them like wind to safety. Yes, kangaroos forage in groups, jump together as families of mother, father, baby Joey in her pouch, or grown-up Joey by their side. Their backs and heads down peacefully far as forest greens. Yes. Kangaroos hop, and kangaroos box, and kangaroos hear, and eat alone, or with their families, or with their friends. Yes, kangaroos have life. Yes, kangaroos have consciousness. Yes. Considering all things, could kangaroos, hard as their bodies may be, within those unique bodies, also be soul?
The end.